You're listening to Three Kitchens Podcast, hosted by your favorite home cooks, Aaron Walker and Heather Dyer. Join us for inspiration and a new recipe every Tuesday. Hello, how are you today? This is Aaron Walker of Three Kitchens Podcast, and I'm joined by Heather Dyer. I almost called you Heather Walker. Oh boy.
We're just one big happy family over here.
Yeah. We have a guest today that's joining us. Her name is Sarah Morgan, and she runs the Cooking with the First Ladies.
Yeah, she has this super fun Instagram account, Cooking with the First Ladies, that we kind of stumbled upon. And I think we got lucky when the old algorithm popped that one up for us, because it's something that we love, which is history and food and cooking. And it's just, it's so cool how these things converge. And she had discovered this cookbook with recipes attributed to first ladies of the United States, and she started cooking her way through it and posting about it. And it's so fun.
Yeah. And she's grown it to include a small series that she did on the suffragettes, and she's launching a new series on the Calutron girls who worked on the Manhattan Project. And I just saw one of those posts.
She's already started it, and it's, yeah, it's quite fascinating.
Oh, right?
You have to hear her talk about it, and be sure to go and check out Cooking with the First Ladies on Instagram to follow along, because the stories are very cool. The food is interesting. There's all kinds of fun stuff where those two things match up.
Yeah. And she's even got stuff that she's doing with the National First Ladies Library. Like you said, putting those things together and learning about more with food. We are here for it. So she's got us cooking two recipes from Pat Nixon and Mamie Eisenhower.
That's right.
So we had some fun cooking, getting into the kitchen, trying new things that we hadn't before. And like always, learning something new.
That's the best part of it.
Yeah.
So thank you, Sarah, for joining us. And thank you, listener, for coming along for the ride. We hope you enjoyed this interview.
Hello, Sarah. Welcome to Three Kitchens Podcast. We are really excited to have you here today.
Super excited to be here. Super excited to talk to you guys.
This is really fun. I've been really looking forward to this. And it's the intersection of things that Aaron and I both really love, which is food, obviously. The history of the food and the recipes and everything is just so super interesting.
Mm-hmm. The whole project, it's been a really super cool way to learn about history and to learn about the first ladies and some of the other ladies that I'm kind of branching out learning about. So I have a degree in history, but I didn't really know a lot about the first ladies in general. And after this, I know so much more about them, and they're so cool. But it was just kind of a really unique way to kind of present it and kind of dig into these ladies.
Mm-hmm. So where did this idea of bringing the first ladies into this and the cooking piece sort of come from? How did this all start up?
It was actually my husband. It was kind of his idea, actually. I found the First Ladies cookbook. We were at a thrift store, been on one of my bookshelves at this point for a really long time. And he saw it and he was like, you should cook your way through the First Ladies and you should do it on social media and sort of do like that Julia thing, which it's become so much more than that and how it started out. But yeah, he likes to eat and I like to do research. And so I was like, you know what, let's do it. It'll be really fun.
Oh, awesome. So you don't have like a cooking background?
No, oh, wow. I don't. So I've really gotten a lot better in the kitchen and I've learned a lot more than I definitely knew before. I was really terrible at baking, especially before. Like everything I would bake would be like a failure.
Me too.
Not so much anymore. So yeah, that's another thing that I really learned a lot about, because prior to that, my husband had a lot more experience in the kitchen than I did. So
that's why he thought you should take it on, maybe.
So like, maybe
he's like, practice makes perfect.
Isn't he lucky?
he is lucky. Not only does he get to eat all of these dishes, but He does do all of the dishes usually, especially after my big live programs or anything. So he does
Nice.
help out quite a bit with these programs and stuff. So he's grateful.
Oh, that's good.
So what is this? Where did the cookbook come from? Who published the First Lady's Cookbook?
They've had multiple volumes of the First Lady's Cookbook. It wasn't published by a First Lady or even like alongside of a First Lady. So it's a standalone situation that just pulled recipes from just different sources. And some of these recipes, if you look at like Martha Washington, some of those recipes are just ones that she's just known for.
Okay.
So I'm sorry, I don't know who published it, but
That's okay. I
no.
was just curious. I didn't know there was a cookbook. So I was just curious where it originated, I guess. That's
Yeah, that
interesting.
particular one. Yeah. Some of the first ladies have cookbooks that are specific to them. My next live program for the National First Ladies Library is in March, and I'm doing Bess Truman. And she actually has a cookbook that's sort of connected to her. It's called the Bess Collection. Like the Bush family also kind of has a family cookbook. I mean, there's tons of publications out there that use the first ladies and their recipes.
Right. Interesting. Well, and there was also a long period of time. You don't see it as much now, but when recipes were published in like magazines, women's magazines or newspapers, and they were always attributed to either someone who submitted it or someone famous, right? So I imagine a good number of them probably showed up in those types of publications.
Oh, absolutely. There
Huh.
was the First Lady's Cookie Competition, which was back in 1992. Hillary Clinton basically said that she had a career and that she wasn't going to be at home having tea parties and baking cakes and cookies and stuff, essentially. And that really offended American housewives.
Oh.
So the Family Circle magazine was like, okay, Hillary, give us a cookie recipe. Barbara Bush, give us a cookie recipe. And they published those. And that went on for several years. So everybody has always been really fascinated by the first ladies, their recipes, and yes, celebrities in general.
Yeah. So talking about what kind of role the first ladies played. Sort of, I mean, I can't see Hillary Clinton in the kitchen. I totally get that. But these other women beforehand, like what kind of role or what kind of job did they have in the White House?
It very much evolved over time and from the very first lady all the way till what the first lady does now. You know, kind of in the beginning, they weren't really even known as first ladies. That Martha
Okay.
Washington wasn't called first lady, you know, necessarily. Of course, she's referred to that today. But their roles have always been changing, and they don't spend a lot of time in the kitchen, especially most of the modern ones. Jackie
Okay.
Kennedy really didn't cook. But some of the things that they kind of especially do are planning the state dinners and the social events and being kind of the White House kind of hostess. But as the years have progressed, you know, they kind of have their own platforms and kind of their own things that they advocate for and their kind of projects, I guess, that they would want to
Right.
focus on.
They do like public speaking and that kind of stuff too, right?
Yes.
They can kind of use their position in the White House to draw attention to different communities or groups that they feel need that
Absolutely.
attention, right?
Absolutely. And a lot of them too are kind of the female president, basically. You know, they are kind of the symbol for kind of women in the country. And they kind of influence, I feel like, American culture more so than the president. Eleanor Roosevelt, for instance, was first lady during the Great Depression and World War II. And she very much stood up in solidarity with the American people, and they rationed at the White House. And she sort of was, you know, kind of a symbol for that and kind of influenced people to, you know, go along with it sort of thing.
Right. And who knows how many of them were actually influenced decisions behind the scenes.
Oh, a lot of them.
Yeah, they've got some influence with that person
Absolutely.
in the top job.
Absolutely. One of the most, actually the most, kind of what you would say is influential behind the scenes first lady was Edith Wilson. Her husband, Woodrow Wilson, when he was president, he had a stroke, and she stepped in, and she's kind of like seen as our first female president. She's probably one of the ones with the most behind the scenes influence.
This is interesting. Aaron and I were talking about this because we're Canadian and we don't have a position of a first lady. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't really know anything about them. Honestly, we hardly hear about them unless there's some scandal in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's a different sort of structure of things.
Yeah.
I think it's quite fascinating, actually, the role of the first lady and this connection to women, American women. Mm-hmm. It's so smart, especially at a time in history, when there women didn't have much say in government, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. But as time has gone on, they have become very much a symbol of the White House, which is great.
Yeah, it's. I think it's really interesting.
Where did they start coming up with this idea of these women being this role model? Because like you said, Martha Washington wasn't a first lady. When did that sort of position become this?
I want to say probably Dolly Madison, who was, okay. I think she was the first one referred to
okay.
as a first lady.
When would that have been?
She was first lady in the early 1800s.
Oh, wow.
Okay, wow.
So
okay.
Jefferson was our third president of the United States.
Okay.
And she, Dolly Madison, acted as his first lady. And then she became first lady as the fourth. And she was a big hostess, held huge parties.
Okay.
So she was kind of, in my opinion, probably could be seen as one of the first
ladies. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's a long time ago. So that's a couple hundred years of that role. That's very interesting.
You know, Martha Washington, first lady, they just didn't call her that. Mm-hmm. She definitely has recipes that are attributed to her, and they've been around for a really long time. Mm-hmm. One of Martha's recipes was actually the very first recipe, because I started at the beginning, first recipe that I cooked for the whole project. And it's one that if you look up Martha Washington and recipes for her, it's definitely one of her recipes, but it's for beefsteak and kidney pie.
Oh my gosh, Sarah, I saw your video. Did you recently do like a throwback and you reposted it? Because I saw your video when you tasted it. It was really hilarious.
Oh, it was bad. It was really bad. And that was like basically the first recipe. And I thought, this is going to be a terrible project as well. It's not going to be good.
Would all of the first ladies, or did they not have chefs always, or did they always have cooks, or was there a time when there weren't any cooks or chefs?
There was never a time when there weren't cooks or chefs.
Okay.
However, it went from being enslaved workers to hired professional chefs. Yeah.
Right,
so
right.
In the beginnings of the White House, any of the cooking would have been done by enslaved individuals. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Huh, right.
So, yeah. But then they did have hired cooks. A lot of times the presidents, first ladies would choose French chefs, especially. They liked kind of fancier foods. Eleanor Roosevelt's kind of housekeeper, kind of one of the cooks, was Henrietta Nesbitt. And she had notoriously terrible food because they were doing the rationing thing for the Great Depression and World War II. And FDR, who was president at that time, he was not happy about it. He was a super foodie, like it. So it really depended upon like the time period and also kind of the foods that the first ladies especially would bring into the White House, kind of depending on where they were from. And so some of them would have, you know, their favorite recipes. And so sometimes they would go, and although they might not be in the kitchen cooking, they would take these recipes to those chefs and kind of show them how to make it, tell them how they liked it. And then that would be incorporated into what the first family was eating.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fun. Well, I just imagine like all these little recipe cards. I'm sure there's like a little Rolodex full of, or a little box of recipe cards.
Oh, I doubt it. Every new chef's got their own thing, I bet.
I'm sure there's something like that exists at the White House. But I do know because of course, first ladies don't have a library except for the National First Ladies Library itself. So there's just the one, which is the one that I do some live programs for. One of the places that I do find some of these recipes is their digitized archives online, as well as the National Archives also has digitized copies of a lot of different first ladies recipes at their various presidential libraries.
That's cool. You mentioned the interesting steak and kidney pie. Are there any other recipes that you've either cooked or just come across that really stand out to you as like either loved him or hated him?
So Jackie Kennedy's beef stroganoff, that was a really good one. Of course, that's not like she didn't come up with that or anything. But it's one that she kind of has in her recipe collection of sorts. Dolly Madison's macaroni soup, and it was topped with onion rings, or what we would call onion rings today. So actually, when I did that the first time, I didn't really know how to make onion rings, so I actually just went to the fast food and went through the drive-through and got some. But that one
Nice.
was weird because it was like macaroni casserole with onion rings on top. Another one was Thomas Jefferson, which he wasn't a first lady, but he didn't have one. Vegetable chartreuse, which is basically like a vegetable mold. And it seemed like it was going to be really gross. And to me, it did not look appetizing at all. But actually, it was pretty good.
Oh, like a jelly thing?
Kind of like a jelly, but it was a lot more solid than a jelly. Mamie Eisenhower has a pumpkin chiffon pie. And I made that this past fall, and I topped it with bourbon pecans, and it was really good. I mean, it's really good in general. But my husband was even like, "I don't like pumpkin pie. I love the pumpkin pie. I made it." He's like, "You have to make this again." So I made it for family Thanksgiving as well, and everybody ate it up. So definitely pumpkin chiffon pie for Mamie is good, which is strange because Mamie Eisenhower was a self-proclaimed cooking school dropout. Actually, she was not very good in the kitchen. Her husband, though, was really good. Ike was a really good cook.
How did he have time? How would he have time to cook anything?
I don't think that he did as much in the White House as he did in retirement and before.
Do you know how many recipes you have made in your Cooking with the First Lady series so far?
That is a really great question. Definitely, I've cooked for all of the first ladies at this point, except for one. And there's been 43 some odd first ladies, but with additional ones that were acting in the role because the wife would pass away. So we'll just round up, we'll say 50. And I probably at least cooked two to three recipes for each one.
Oh,
So,
okay. Yeah, it is quite a lot of them. A lot of
yeah.
recipes.
And then beyond that, additional ones like doing the various different live programs, like doing the cookie competition this past fall and cooking all those cookies. I'd say probably I've cooked 250, 300 recipes probably.
See, it is hundreds. You were like,
Yeah.
no, not hundreds. Yeah, that's a
That's
lot. That's crazy.
it doesn't seem like that, but yeah, I guess so.
And do you do all these yourself then? You don't have any other like kitchen staff or friends that are
No,
along for the ride?
not usually. I do have one of my friends, Rhoda. She is an exceptional baker, and so she has come over and sometimes helped me with the cakes. She helped
Okay,
me make
yes.
all of those cookie doughs when I did the thing this past fall. So yeah, I do occasionally have some help, and my husband definitely helps where he can. But I like doing it myself. It's kind of an activity. So mostly me.
That's fantastic. I want to quickly hear before we get to the break and recipes. I want to quickly hear about the new project that you announced you're going to be working on. Can you tell us about that?
Sure, I'm really excited about it. So it's cooking with the Calutron girls. Basically cooking with these ladies who worked in what was known as Atomic City. There were three locations during the Manhattan Project when they were building the atomic bomb. And one of them was here in Tennessee in Oak Ridge. And they have a cookbook, and it's called Cooking Behind the Fence. And it's a collection of recipes from all these women who lived there during the time of the Manhattan Project. Calutron girls specifically, there were these basically 10,000 almost young
Oh,
women, most of them
wow.
were right out of high school, who they actually ran the Calutron machines, which separated the uranium-238 from the uranium-235. And so they essentially collected over 100 pounds of uranium-235, which was the fuel that they used for the little boy atomic bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima in August of 1945. So they called it the Secret City because nobody there knew what they were doing. Originally, the higher ups were really nervous about these young ladies running these very important machines. I mean, that was like top level work that they were doing. And so they sort of pitted them against male trained scientists, like that had degrees and stuff. And these girls, they just sat there, they did their job, they turned the dials, they paid attention, they asked no questions. The men kind of got distracted and they would ask all these different questions about how this was all working. And they didn't want people to be asking questions, no matter what job you were doing. So they're like, okay, well, we're going to go with these young ladies. So I'm just going to cook several of the recipes from that cookbook and highlight some of the stories of these women, and then kind of do quite a bit of research, you know, on Oak Ridge and, you know, Manhattan Project itself, and just the ladies that were involved in working on that project and effectively helping end World War II.
Yeah, it's fascinating. That is a really cool, really cool project.
I will tell you that there's one recipe that I am going to try, and that's brains and eggs. Okay. That's one of the recipes in there. I will tell you the other one, though, that I absolutely hands down will not be doing is fried squirrel.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, not doing that.
I don't know that you could trust the quality of squirrel meat in this day and age.
Where do you source that? Squirrel from. I don't want the trash squirrels that hang around in my neighborhood.
No,
that's not happening.
Will this project be on your same accounts, Cooking with the First Ladies?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break. We have recipes from Pat Nixon and Mamie Eisenhower to come back and chat about. Hey, listener. We are just blown away by the kindness and generosity of our guests on the podcast. They lend us their time and share their knowledge with all of us so we can learn and be better cooks and bakers at home. If you enjoy our guest episodes, like this one, please see her links in the show notes. Go follow and support her. And if you have an idea for a guest, please send us a message. We'd love to hear it. Now, let's get back to our interview with Sarah Morgan and Cooking with the First Ladies.
How did you choose these recipes that you selected and sent to us to make?
I chose these two because they are both really good recipes. And also both of these recipes have kind of interesting stories kind of associated with them. Like the meatloaf recipe, for instance, especially, and that's like such like an American dish, like make the meatloaf, serve it with some mashed potatoes and some peas and whatnot. But Pat Nixon brought that recipe to the White House. It was one of the favorites of her husband. And shortly after they left the White House, Pat phoned her old friend and social secretary, Lucy Winchester, back at the White House because Richard wanted her to cook this meatloaf. So she looks for it. She can't find it. And it turns out that the FBI had confiscated the recipe and they actually still were hanging on to it. The FBI was confiscating all sorts of things from the Nixons, even one of their daughter's wedding dresses, supposedly, because of the Watergate scandal. That stuff going on in the White House. So the FBI actually confiscated this meatloaf recipe. So I think that's just hilarious.
That is really funny.
Eventually, they must have released it back to her, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
Well, I made the meatloaf. I have to admit, I don't have much experience making meatloaf. I think it really is an American, classic sort of American dish. When I said I was making meatloaf, my husband's like, oh, I love meatloaf. I'm like, you do? I didn't know that. Like,
interesting.
Heard you say that. Yeah. And he's a firefighter and he says the guys at work make it. I'm like, really? I had no idea. I never think to make meatloaf. So, but I didn't really have a reference to compare this recipe to. And usually ground beef, right, is traditional. Usually you have bread that you cube up and soak in milk and mix with the meat. And then there's different spices. You might have, you know, different flavorings. This one I thought was interesting that it had like the breadcrumbs on top and the tomato kind of flavor through it. Sarah, if you're more familiar with meatloaf recipes in general, how does it compare? Is it pretty typical, or is there something about it that's different and special?
Well, whenever I have made meatloaf before, and I am by no means a meatloaf expert, I had never done the whole bread and milk thing. And I also had not put breadcrumbs on top of mine. And it was usually ketchup that would go on top before you baked it. And this was tomato paste. That part to me and other people that have tried it really made all the difference. And I just kind of really liked this one. And I did like the addition of the bread and the milk. I thought it kind of made it a little bit light, like fluffy-ish and a little more like filling. And I don't know if most of them have parsley in it, but that was kind of a new thing for me to put in there too. So
Aaron, I didn't have parsley. Sorry, I forgot to pick up parsley. So if you're going, was there parsley in there? No, there was not. One thing I did like about the method of making it is that I think in the past when I have made meatloaf, it was in a loaf pan. And I liked that this was on like a baking sheet with a rack. And then you sort of just form it, free form with your hands on top of the rack so that the fat kind of, and the grease doesn't kind of pool in the loaf tin. Like that's what I felt like was always kind of like a lump in there. This felt a bit lighter because it wasn't quite as greasy or packed in the pan. I don't know. I felt like the texture of it was better.
Yeah. The grease does drain off of it really well.
And I would say that meatloaf is something my family enjoys. The breadcrumb topping was new and fantastic. I usually make mine with breadcrumbs mixed in milk, and it doesn't quite add that same sort of airy, fluffy texture that those bigger chunks of bread did. So I think I will definitely be adding those two things into the meatloaf I make for my family. And I think it stretches your meat further. You can serve a bigger meatloaf.
Was that the idea behind meatloaf originally? It was sort of like a way to stretch your meat. Now it's almost a convenience dish, right? Because you can quickly make a meatloaf.
You can. So yeah, definitely I would say it would stretch your meat for sure, since you're adding in all these different things. So I assume, yeah, that
using what you've got, right? Yeah. And making it go a little further.
And yeah. I think it's like a cheaper way of putting a roast on the table, like, because it's
kind of like a roast. You can slice it and serve it,
you know.
Yeah.
Put some gravy with it,
and probably a little cheaper.
Yeah,
a little cheaper to make versus a pot roast or something like that. Yeah, probably cheaper,
I would guess, and probably faster. Yeah,
does not take all day to make a meatloaf.
No, that's the best part.
Yeah,
and so Pat Nixon, she actually, those were on like campaign door knockers during like their 1968 campaign. And I think that was like around Thanksgiving too.
Oh, that's a really interesting way to advertise to a different set of the population.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah. And that's sort of like the suffragettes. And they had those cookbooks, and they were using those cookbooks as like a tool to say, we can vote and we can do these things, but we can still cook and be housewives too. And so I think with the first ladies, you know, using them as a campaign material, submitting them to magazines, newspapers, etc., it was sort of a way to connect to the American women, you know, to say, we know you're a housewife.
We're just like you.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And there's some common ground there. So even if maybe they're on the opposite end of the political spectrum from what you typically would vote for or whatever, now we have some common ground. We both like to make meatloaf for our families, right? Like,
absolutely. You
know, oversimplifying, but
yeah, no, like, absolutely.
I think that sums it up nicely.
It does. Yeah. I mean, and people loved the first ladies. I mean, Pat Nixon, like, they had campaign pins that said like Pat for First Lady and different things. Mm-hmm. And Betty Ford was another very popular first lady. And they kind of had that too. Like, really sometimes liked the first ladies better than the presidents, actually. And, you know, and sort of thought that they were, you know, better than them. So I think that, yeah, the recipes just were a good connector.
Yeah. So I took on Mamie Eisenhower's fudge recipe. I can't think of the last time I had fudge or where I would get fudge.
Yeah, it's not really a thing where we are so much. So we were just chatting earlier about how it must be sort of a regional like thing that you see. We were talking about how when you go to a tourist spot, oh, there might be fudge. It's like, that's what it feels like, as opposed to something you make at home. So this was really interesting.
Yeah.
I'd say that's, in my opinion, with my, what I do with fudge, I don't make fudge. I've made this fudge, but yeah, I do. I feel the same. But I just, again, this, I thought this was a really cool recipe just because of kind of the story behind it as well.
Okay.
This was a super popular First Lady recipe. Mamie was First Lady during the nifty 50s. And again, she was a self-proclaimed cooking dropout. And that was really because she was never permitted in the kitchen when she was young, because her family actually just had cooks and chefs and different things. They were kind of more wealthy. They had a maid, that sort of thing.
Right.
Ike, her husband, the president, was more of a cook. But Mamie's recipe first appeared in the cookbook. It was called Who Says We Can't Cook? And that was in 1955. And that was a fundraising effort that was kind of featuring recipes from prominent women in DC. This fudge recipe was just a very popular recipe. And Ike was the one kind of, I believe, coined it the $1 million fudge. And they served it at the White House. They served it during their retirement. Ike would sometimes make like a beef stew and they'd have people over. And part of this meal always kind of included this fudge recipe. So in regards to fudge, I also think it's interesting just because when else do you buy marshmallow cream, in my opinion?
Never have I bought it.
So it's, you know, it's, I think, kind of like a very 1950s dish. And just interesting because, I mean, I just can't even picture Mamie herself making the fudge, but it's her recipe and
we'll just go with that.
She was like, Ike, go make me some fudge. And then she brought it out.
Yeah. I ended up halving the recipe that you did send us.
I usually always half, if not sometimes even third, a recipe when I'm making it, just because of the amount of ingredients. I mean, 4.5 cups of sugar is a lot of sugar, unless you're making something that's, you know, for an event or something. So I probably have to too.
Since you're not making it for a state dinner, Erin.
No. Yeah. Or like a huge thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know enough people to serve all that fudge to.
No. I know.
I thought the marshmallow was interesting. My limited experience with fudge, I think, is pretty basic fudge. This seemed like a little extra something.
Yeah. I sliced it up and sent some to Heather and I was like, is this the right texture? I'm not 100% sure that I got it right. Heather mentioned that it was a confection and that it's a candy. And I was like, oh, so this might have been more complicated. So from a little bit of the research that I did, it sounds like this is the easy edition of fudge, or like the home cook's edition of fudge, because normally it would just be, what was it, 4 or 5 ingredients that you heated to a certain temperature. And then as you let it cool, it crystallizes and forms what we would call fudge. But using the marshmallow cream and the sweetened condensed milk that was in here, that sort of assists in making it the right texture, sort of in a foolproof way.
Oh, I'm sure. Because like I said, Mamie did not know how to cook. So she definitely would have had the easy fudge way. And I'm assuming that that probably was popular with the American public because this was a publicized recipe, because I'm sure a lot of women were like, I would like to make fudge, but I can't do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's what I kind of learned.
It turned out
it was chocolatey. It was sweet. I had a good laugh, or my husband and I had a good laugh, because the meatloaf and the fudge beside each other, they both looked like brown loaves. I was like, so is this meatloaf or is this meatloaf or is this?
Oh my gosh. I did not even think about them both being the same kind of color when I sent them.
We made a sweet loaf and a savory loaf.
Perfect.
Well, you kind of did. Kind of, yeah.
Did.
But I thought it was a like softer, chewier kind of fudge. And it might have been because of the marshmallow. But from what I remember of fudge, it was a bit more like crystallized and drier. But I actually really liked that soft texture to it.
It's soft in comparison, for sure. Mm-hmm.
The marshmallow cream
is totally different. Yeah, mm-hmm. I do too. I'm not really a huge fudge person. If I do see it out somewhere, I really don't ever buy it. But that fudge is actually a pretty good one.
Mm-hmm. The kids loved it. So if you got like chocolate loving kids, this one's a hit. And they like the marshmallow. Erin, you didn't have marshmallow, what's the stuff called?
Fluff, I did not cream? Have the marshmallow cream. Right, but right. You can melt marshmallows to make it, which didn't work out great because most of it ended up sticking in the pan. So I just tossed I had the mini marshmallows and I just put them in. And as I poured the boiling syrup over it, it just all melted together. And there were a few little chunks of marshmallows here and there, but overall I think they still performed their
I think that's what the kids liked, was that there were little bits of marshmallow in there.
That's awesome.
They were like, oh, there's marshmallow in here. Yeah.
That's a super good idea. I mean, especially because like I said, when do you really buy marshmallow cream? So, yeah. I mean, that's just a totally other way to make it and kind of much easier because marshmallow cream is so sticky.
Yeah. Too sticky. Mini marshmallows. Definitely. You can get away with that.
Oh, I like that a lot.
Even simpler, right?
Absolutely. I mean, why not?
So that was really fun because I don't think I would have ever made fudge or learned about it without having had this. It was a really interesting experience.
You can thank Mamie.
Yeah, thanks Mamie. And also thanks to Pat, because now you know that your husband is a meatloaf fan. This is like just all around learning experience for all sorts of different reasons.
Oh, totally. And we've learned so much about first ladies. Like we came in not really knowing, I mean, clearly I didn't even know how many there were. So this is a lot of fun. And we are really enjoying following what you're doing. Love the history connection with the food. It is what a great way to learn about either of those things. Maybe you know the history, but you don't know as much about food, or vice versa, and you're learning something. I think it's so smart.
Yeah, there have been first ladies with really good taste in food and some with really bad. so ultimately, though, a lot of them pretty good.
Nice. Thank you so much for joining us. It has been a pleasure meeting you and talking about all this. It's so fun. And can't wait to follow along and see what comes next. We hope all of our listeners will also go check out your stuff because it really is a lot of fun. And, keep eating weird things so we can hear all about it.
Absolutely.
Can you remind our listeners where they can find you and follow you?
Just on Instagram at Cooking with the First Ladies. I also have a webpage. It's www.cookingwiththefirstladies.com. And from there, you can also see the link to Facebook. And for any of my previous live programs or pre-recorded videos, you can go to the National First Ladies Library YouTube page and find it all there. So.
Cool. And we will link to all of those in our show notes as well. So listener, just scroll and click and there it is. This is so awesome.
Oh, so interesting. This has been so much fun.
This has been great. Thank you guys so much. I love it.
Thanks so much.
And now for the fine print. Join us over on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and on our website at threekitchenspodcast.com. Remember, when you like, follow, subscribe, and leave us a review. It helps more people find us. Thank you so much for listening. I'll never think of Martha Washington the same again.
I know. Absolutely not.